are not seeking a new Cold War.
President Biden addresses the UN General Assembly. It's Wednesday, September 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, documentary follows Afghan youth. Geopolitical challenges facing Germany. Fixing broken gadgets for free. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In his first address as U.S. President to the United Nations General Assembly, Joe Biden opened by addressing the challenge and loss facing the world from COVID-19, and he appealed to delegates to address climate change.
Will we work together to save lives, defeat COVID-19 everywhere, and take the necessary steps to prepare ourselves for the next pandemic, for there will be another one? Or will we fail to harness the tools at our disposal as the more virulent and dangerous variants take hold? Will we meet the threat of challenging climate, the challenging climate we're all feeling, already ravaging every part of our world with extreme weather? Or will we suffer the merciless march of ever-worsening droughts and floods, more intense fires and hurricanes, longer heat waves and rising seas? Will we affirm and uphold the human dignity and human rights under which nations in common cause more than seven decades ago formed this institution?
Biden says the world stands at an inflection point in history and called for diplomacy.
We are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks. The United States is ready to work with any nation that steps up and pursues peaceful resolution to shared challenges, even if we have intense disagreements in other areas, because we'll all suffer the consequences of our failure.
Biden delivered the speech after the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and a new deal with Australia and the United Kingdom that has angered France, one of America's oldest European allies.
The world today is not the world of 2001, though. And the United States is not the same country we were when we were attacked on 9/11 20 years ago. Today, we're better equipped to detect and prevent terrorist threats, and we are more resilient in our ability to repel them and to respond. We know how to build effective partnerships to dismantle terrorist networks by targeting their financing and support systems, countering their propaganda, preventing their travel, as well as disrupting imminent attacks. We'll meet terrorist threats that arise today and in the future with a full range of tools available to us, including working in cooperation with local partners so that we need not be so reliant on large-scale military deployments.
Biden will host other world leaders at a virtual COVID-19 summit on Wednesday. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Lawyer says U.S. journalist in Myanmar jail seems disheartened. EU rallies behind Macron as dispute among France, Britain, and U.S. worsens. Regional extremists energized by Taliban takeover could pose threat to Pakistan and China interest, expert says. How a Western military pact for nuclear subs affects China. After Merkel, what role will Germany have on global stage? Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Wednesday. My Childhood, My Country, 20 Years in Afghanistan, is the latest documentary by award-winning filmmakers Phil Grabsky and Shoaib Sharifi. Grabsky spoke with VOA's Penelope Pulu about this 20-year film expose on life in Afghanistan through the eyes of an Afghan youth from his early childhood to today.
Phil Grabsky's lens starts following young Mir's life since U.S. and allied forces invaded Afghanistan in 2001 after the September 11 attacks. Months before the 9/11 attacks on the United States in 2001, the Taliban had destroyed the Buddhas of Bamiyan in Afghanistan, one of the most significant archaeological sites in the world. Grabsky flew to Kabul to chronicle how these events were affecting the embattled country. While touring the ruins, he met young Mir and his family living in caves in abject poverty.
That energy, that vivacity, that inquisitiveness, I suddenly thought, of course, the film is what will happen over the next year in this young boy's life. Because that then projects the audience forwards, thinking about the future of Afghanistan.
Gradually, says Grabsky, Mir's boyish exuberance and optimism faded under the weight of poverty and family responsibilities. After years in front of the camera lens, Mir, now a father of two, has taken up the camera himself, working as a cameraman in Kabul. On May 31st, 2017, a bomb exploded in Kabul, killing more than 250 people and injuring hundreds. The blast missed Mir by mere luck.
We would have to check under the wheel arches of our cars every single journey because the Taliban were employing and ISIS were putting sticky bombs and blowing up journalists and judges and election officials. I mean, it's horrific, horrible.
Grabsky says recently he has not been to Afghanistan. It is no longer safe for Westerners to film there. His Afghan co-director, Shoaib Sharifi, has continued filming there, but even for him, it is not safe.
I've met lots of courageous and brave women, but the Afghan women are something else, you know, and even now they're out demonstrating. Unbelievable. They deserve our wholehearted support.
Grabsky says, "My childhood, my country, 20 years in Afghanistan, is a labor of love spanning almost 20 years. It chronicles the forces that shape Afghanistan and its people."
And it's very beautiful to look at. It's dramatic. It's funny. And above all, I think it gives you a real insight into the type of person that's currently queuing at the airport or arriving in your town.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Still ahead on VOA Asia, geopolitical challenges, namely China, await Germany's new leader. Happening now in Asia, Taiwan is mulling the removal of a prominent statue of former President Chiang Kai-shek in what is described as a reflection on its authoritarian past. But the proposal has drawn mixed reactions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Germany is preparing to elect a new leader in elections scheduled September 26th, as incumbent Chancellor Angela Merkel's 16 years in power come to an end. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Berlin, her successor will face a series of immediate geopolitical challenges, from the rise of China to balancing transatlantic relations.
Hamburg, Germany's biggest port, handles more than 8.5 million containers every year. Almost a third are shipped to and from China, four times more than second-placed the United States. And Beijing has its eyes on this critical part of Germany's infrastructure. Chinese state-owned shipping firm COSCO wants to buy a third of the shares in the container port. The port's owners and the mayor support the deal, saying it's vital for Hamburg's growth. But critics say Germany should be wary. Jürgen Hart is a lawmaker with the ruling Christian Democrats Party.
I would prefer to have a change of shares between Hamburg Harbour and maybe Shanghai Harbour.
But China does not allow foreign companies to own its infrastructure. Germany's geopolitical dilemma echoes that of Hamburg. Is China friend or foe? In recent years, tensions have grown over Beijing's treatment of its Muslim Uyghur population, the crackdown on democratic rights in Hong Kong, and military expansion in the South China Sea. Germany has found itself caught in the middle, says analyst Liana Fix.
On the one side, they feel the pressure from the United States. On the other hand, there are also economic interests, especially for member states that are highly dependent on trade with China.
With Russia too, Germany finds itself caught between East and West. Despite Russia's 2014 invasion of Ukraine, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has pushed ahead with the construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which was completed this month. It will carry Russian gas directly to Germany, bypassing Ukraine, which has until now benefited from lucrative transit fees. Ukraine's president recently offered Merkel this blunt warning.
I believe that this Nord Stream 2 is a weapon. I believe that not to notice that this is a dangerous weapon, not only for Ukraine, but for the whole of Europe, is wrong.
Navigating global affairs won't be easy for Germany's next leader, says analyst Gero Neugebauer, a professor of political science at the Freie University in Berlin.
Die Mehrheit nimmt wahr, dass sich
Deutschland. He said the majority of people see that Germany is currently in a crisis situation. Merkel's successor will have either limited international experience or none at all.
Entweder geringe internationale Erfahrung oder keine.
Merkel sought compromise and dialogue. How will her successor balance Germany's drive for prosperity with competing global rivalries? The world will be watching closely as Europe's biggest economy prepares for a new era. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
Finally on VOA Asia, instead of throwing away broken gadgets, repair enthusiasts encourage people to try fixing their own things with Fix-It clinics and free tutorials. Matt Dibble reports.
When the timer that Myra Silverman uses to turn on lights in her home broke, she could have replaced it for about $12. Instead, she brought it to a Fix-It clinic.
We all ought to be able to fix our things rather than just throwing them away.
Also here tonight, a toaster, a Laserdisc player, and a pepper grinder. Peter Mui has been running free workshops like this one since 2009, motivated by the decline of repair shops and the growth of what he says is a throwaway culture.
The issue that we're all facing right now is that our consumption is killing the planet. Something is broken about the way that we are constantly bringing these new items into our lives.
The clinic supplies tools and volunteer coaches.
Most of the stuff that we get presented with, we can fix. We have a 70% repair rate on average.
But repair advocates like Kyle Weens say their work is getting harder because manufacturers withhold repair information and parts.
It used to be every product came with instructions of how to take it apart. These days, unfortunately, they don't. So we take things apart, figure out how to fix them, write instructions, put them online, and make it easy for the next person.
To help promote home repair, Weens founded iFixit, a website that shares free repair instructions.
We have over 75,000 guides. We'll show you how to fix your vacuum or your bicycle, your toaster, your phone. Pretty much anything that would break in your house, we probably got a useful repair guide for it.
I hope so, yes!
Back at the Fix-It clinic, some will be going home victorious, while others will live to fix another day. But all should take home some new skills and knowledge. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Oakland, California.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Enjoy the day. You take care now.